what we'll do is go back and forth. I'll just chat a little bit here. This year, I put myself on the committees that are going to be dealing with the policy issues that are most important, the ones I campaigned on, the ones that you care about. I'm on Judiciary for the Crime Bills, State Affairs for Crime and PFD Bills, Finance for everything, and Transportation to deal with some of the Marine Highway reductions and Kenai Peninsula Highway projects. And then those are my budget subcommittees. I'm chairing Admin, Fish and Game, Public Safety, and I'm a member of Corrections and Natural Resources. Oops, we went away for some reason. Oh, okay. I don't know. It's probably my fault. I'm married. Everything's my fault. My top priorities are the ones you heard about for the last year, state budget reductions for long-term sustainability, the repeal and replacement of 91, tough consequences for criminals and support for victims, a full statutory PFD, and a future plan and discussion of constitutional protection, growing, diversifying Alaska's economy, a larger pie, which we've lost focus as we continue to talk about slashing. We've lost focus on what a thriving Alaska looks like in the future, and continued reduction of barriers to business. We're going to talk about this, so I'm going to wait, hand it off to Representative Carpenter to talk about his assignments and priorities.
Hey, good afternoon, and thank you all for coming. Throughout my campaign season of this earlier, I said that we need to increase the participation in our communities, and this is what it looks like. I appreciate all of you coming out and having a say, sharing your thoughts and participating in the process that we are going through. We are faced with a proposal right now, and likely what ends up being the final budget is not what you're looking at now. This is the process in which we engage in to figure out what right looks like. So thank you. So y'all have probably followed in the news the problems or the challenges that we've had in the House. We're organized now, and we had our first Finance Committee meeting Thursday. So we're a little bit behind the ball in as it related to the Senate. They've been having Finance Committee meetings longer than we have, or for more time than we have. So we're going to get caught up as quick as we can. With the reorganization or the organization that happened, I am now on the Finance Committee for the House, and look forward to serving all of you in making the best budget decision that we can going forward. My priorities remain the same as they were when I ran for office and you all put me in this position. We need to repeal and replace Senate Bill 91. We need to balance this budget and reduce the size and scope of our government so that it's more manageable. And get back to the statutory formula on the PFD. I can tell you now that some of those are going to be a challenge with the makeup and the organization in the House. I'm going to fight for those priorities because I believe they're the right thing to do, but it's going to be a challenge. Just let you all know that right now. As a way to get started, and just to show you my props, because I really want to get to my props. I don't even know what this is, but it's some sort of fruit.
It's a pomelo.
A pomelo? Okay. This is our budget. This is our appetite over the last however long you want to measure. It's big. Seems like it, but there's the money we got. We got to figure out somehow to make this match that. We're out of money this year. We cannot dip into our savings anymore to solve our problems. So we have to have a conversation about how to balance the budget. That's where this process takes place. We've been talking about tax cuts. We've been talking about dipping into the PFD. We've been talking about cutting things out of the budget. All of those have negative consequences, or just consequences. Some of them are positive, some are negative, but they have consequences. And that's what we continue to talk about. One of the things that Peter mentioned here about the larger pie. The only way out of this, the only way out of our budget situation that's not got a negative consequence in so much is increasing the economy of the state of Alaska. So I would ask you, as public, we need to figure that piece out. Don't look to the government to increase that. That's the economy that's driven by the private sector to increase the standard of living and the amount of money and the hope and the everything that goes with a growing economy. That needs to happen within the state of Alaska if we want to see a better budget problem. We can support that within the legislature, but that's likely the way out of this problem long term. I spoke with the governor last week and said there's a lot of consternation about the budget. And then rightly so, right? It's a ginormous problem. We need a vision of what it looks like on the other side. We've got to get this ship righted, and we got to have a vision of what it looks like going forward. And I will continue to work with the governor from my seat to figure out what that looks like so that we can all get on board and do what's right for the state of Alaska.
Thank you. I'm just going to click through a few more of these, and we can get a little bit to the discussion on the budget, which I think, how many of you are here because of budget issues? How many of you are here because of crime issues? Okay. Well, sort of part of the budget. We had a meeting just before here that was just as full on the Wildwood, which I had thought like 15 guys were going to show up. It was packed, standing room only. So kind of interesting. But what Ben talks about is right. I've been quoted in the news as saying this. Governor Dunleavy's budget, which our district, so I won 67% of the vote, right? Ben won by more than that. Governor Dunleavy won in this district with the same amount, 67%. 60% is a landslide by definition. 67% means that you supported what he talked about, and that is a dramatically reduced budget, a full dividend, and you have to know that that budget is a great starting point for a conversation. My wife always winces when I'm at a meeting and I say, this is an incredible budget. And it is an incredible budget for talking about where we need to go. If you want a balanced budget, now I don't agree with some of the numbers in that budget really have no result. Some of them are just numbers on a piece of paper. They looked for things in the budget that had a lot of digits to the left of the decimal point and plugged them into a chart. Our job as legislators is to actually make that work. So there are reductions, yet we can still deliver key services, right? And if you saw the Medicaid meeting, you knew that some of the things in the budget legally, because of federal law, will take some time. It's not going to be this year. It'll take more time than that. But it's a great conversation starter. That's why we're here today. We want to hear from you about how you feel about those things and which way you want to see things go. But make no mistake, and I would have used a smaller grapefruit. I don't know if I would have used a tangerine. Okay. we have real issues, and we do have to manage the cost of our government. There's no question about that. Some of you here are going to say, just start income tax. Some of you here are going to say, no, continue to slash to the bone. But then when I talk to you about your services, your disabled child services, and you want me to slash to the bone, you need to realize that your disabled child will not receive what they're getting today. In that budget, how many of you are seniors by definition? Guess what? Senior benefits are gone. They're gone. If you support that, that's fine. But what I'm telling you is that in part of that budget, they keep saying that they're not going to support any taxes. But the actions in that budget require municipal taxes to be increased. They require them to be increased. So they may not be talking about state budget or state taxes, but they are talking about municipal taxes, right? The cost of public safety, the cost of our schools, the cost of our highways, just matches that we're going to be doing locally. You're going to pay for them in your property tax. You're going to pay for them in your sales tax. We want real reductions that deliver those services, yet don't get cost shifted to only those of you that work, those of you that own property, and those of you that happen to be in an organized municipality, which is everybody on the Kenai Peninsula Borough. We want it to be a fair reduction that actually gets us where we need to go. So I always show this. This is the real number of what we've been spending. When I got into office, they spent $8 billion. We've tried our best to get the reductions, but and the Senate's reductions would have been much lower. The House has been more resistant. The House was more resistant when it was run by Republicans with Parnell. The House was much more resistant when it was run by Democrats when it was Edgman. The House is organized similar to the way it was last year, similar. There were a few Republicans in the different positions. This isn't a party thing. I'm just saying that it's still going to be tough to get some of those reactions. That's a political reality. So we're going to do the best we can. This is... It's a visual for you. I can get you the chart if you'd like.
Real per capita revenue, the peak is 30,000.
Well, it's the revenue versus so the tall green stuff is revenue. The other stuff is DGF and UGF, as well as UGF on the blue, which is undesignated general funds. The point of the slide is kind of what we've done in the last few years, but it's adjusted for real dollars, which means we are lower than we were on the overall cost, adjusted for inflation from around the 04-05-06 range, and significantly lower than we were in 13. There have been some reductions. We still don't balance. We're not close to balancing. So that is the challenge, is what do we give up? How do we want to pay for the difference if you do want those services to continue? The reason I say Dunleavy's budget is a perfect discussion document is because it's time for you to engage and tell us what's important to you, and for the things we can't afford, how you want to pay for them. Okay? So that slide is just the different departments. As you can see, the vast majority of the spending is in the first three. And that is health and social services, permanent fund dividend, education, and early development. How many of you are here because you're upset about the education budget changes? Okay, just curious. How many of you are here to defend a full PFD? Okay. George, you should have turned around. There's a few more people here for the education thing. So I say this all the time, our revenues are decreased due to lower oil prices. I actually don't think oil prices are low in today's world. In the high 60s, we're pushing 70 again. We'll probably finish the year in the $70 range. The POMV is helping bridge the gap, which does not affect your PFD, but it's using part of the earnings reserve to help cover the gap. There's not going to be a capital budget other than meeting the federal match for highways. I think everyone realizes that. And we have very difficult choices to make. State services actually cost money. They're not free. And if you look at Dunleavy's budget, he actually didn't reduce state employees by much. I mean, I think they're starting to realize that, hey, it takes bodies to do some of this work. It's not magic dust. We have to look at more creative ways. Are there people we can cut from the state roles that are employees? Of course there are. But unfortunately, I don't believe it's in the thousands unless you all decide that there's something major you can do without, right? So that's part of those are part of the discussions we want to have. How do we pay for services Alaskans want with the imbalance, and what are your priorities? That's what we're here to learn. And I like this chart, so I will give you a couple numbers on this. This is kind of the balance point with the FY19 budget. We started the year at $63 a barrel. That fiscal deficit would have been $624 million. Ended up having 67.96 with the fall forecast, which took us down to a deficit of $268 million. And the break-even point for the year would be $71 a barrel with the FY19 budget, which had a $1,600 dividend. It was not a full dividend. So you add that $800 million to it, and you realize that we're, even with the increase in that cost, at the break-even point, we have a gap of $800 million. So I actually don't care about that slide, and I don't care about that. Well, I do care about that slide. FEMA opened an office. What I wanted to talk about for a minute is crime, if that's okay. So can we go to the crime slide? So one of your major things, and if you've taken the survey, you know I'm asking questions about crime, how you feel about it. It is the state, repeal. Senate Bill 91, repeal, replace, crime. Down, down, down. There you go. So I just want to tell you what we're doing right now.
With the Excel spreadsheet?
Yes. Scroll up. Can you make it larger? The first one is Senate Bill 12. Go up, please. And I don't think I can control that from here. That is my bill on the Justin Schneider Loophole Elimination Act. How many of you remember the Justin Schneider case? He essentially kidnapped, strangled a woman into unconsciousness, sexually assaulted her, and served no time in jail. And that's not a Senate Bill 91 thing. That's a problem that's been in existence for years in our sexual assault gap. So this makes unwanted contact with, with a male bodily fluid as a sexual crime, which didn't exist before. It classifies placing that bodily fluid on a person as a sexual assault in the third degree. It requires the offender to register as a sex offender, which was not required with that crime. It requires that strangulation to the point of unconsciousness is defined assault in the first degree, which carries another sentence of 5 to 20 years. It eliminates credit toward time served for electronic monitoring. And thank you very much, Conrad. And it requires that victims are consulted and sign off on plea deals prior to them being offered and finalized, right? So those are huge gaps. So the claim in that case, they couldn't find the victim, but I think if they had to have the victim sign up on the plea deal, and I've actually spoken to Judge Corey and the folks that prosecuted that case said, yeah, if we had a nudge that we actually had to find her, because she came forward after the case was kind of finished. I mean, she did the initial complaint. They went through the case. Schneider walked without a second in jail, and they didn't have a case. The reason Corey settled the case, according to him, which of course now he wishes he wouldn't have, was because at least he would have been on probation for a couple of years where they couldn't have even gotten to that. So this would make it that someone that was the perpetrator of such a heinous crime would go to jail for a very long time. And that was not a part of our law before. On the other changes, the next bill, so they're split up into five bills. The next one is the governor's bill, Senate Bill 32. It repeals... The first one is repealing the section of 91, and it recriminalizes possession of serious drugs as a felony. So for many of you that are resistant to that, what we also included was that first-time drug felonies, if they choose treatment and complete a successful treatment program and do not reoffend, there's two chances for a second chance. First is a suspended imposition of sentence, and the second is a suspended entry of judgment. So if they really choose to turn their lives around, we don't have to ruin their employability in the future forever. And I talked about during the campaign. We can allow them to be successful and to move on with their lives. if they continue to reoffend. The important thing about the drug thing is you choke off the supply by choking off the demand. This will choke off the demand. It's a carrot and a stick at the same time. The next one is drug distribution. This returns all of the distribution charges back to prior to 91. It repeals that section of 91. These are the guys. I'm looking at a few folks in Sterling. I'm looking at a few folks in Nikiski that have been living near drug houses for years. This is what will put those guys away for a very long time. They are the ones that are compromising the lives of Alaskans. In the U.S. today, we have twice the amount of people dying from opioid overdose than we do from vehicle accidents. I mean, it's out of hand. And those are the guys willing to kill your kids for profit. They need to go away for a very long time. And there's a lot of detail. I don't know how much you want me to go into on what we're doing with the crime bill. I'll try to kind of scoot through them fairly quickly. The other section is on sentencing. We increase the ranges back to pre-91. If you can scroll down to Senate Bill 32. Is that where we are?
Sure.
Yeah, 32. That's it. So, excellent. Wow, you're... So on sentencing, we went an AFL, and it used to be 5 to 8, 10 to 14, with a 15 to 20 with a max. It dropped it down significantly in 91. We are back up to that same level of sentencing, with the exception of murder one, which we actually increased in 91. So I believe it's back to an appropriate level. We returned probation back to Senate Bill 90, prior to Senate Bill 91. We return failure to appear prior to Senate Bill 91. That doesn't mean that if there's a strange thing that occurs that someone doesn't make an appointment, that they're going to go away forever. We're leaving that discretion up to the courts. But 91 took the discretion away. It said no matter what, you can't hold someone accountable for failure to appear. And then violating conditions of release have also been returned to what they were before. On, if you can go scroll up a little bit, we repealed the DUI section of Senate Bill 91, and thanks to Will and Shane Madison, who call me like every day, where are they? There they are in front. We are returning driving with a revoked license to what it was before as well, which is a huge issue for law enforcement. It was turned to a violation. If you're driving with a revoked, your license is revoked for typically a criminal serious reason. So with their inability to look inside of a vehicle where there could be drugs and guns and stolen items, they have to let them walk. So we're returning it back to what it was to give our law enforcement the tools they need to manage this crime issue. Senate Bill 33, that is pre-trial bail issue. So you see how they're broken up? I probably should have said that at the beginning. Sorry, Ben, there's not that much longer on this. But the first one was the Schneider loophole elimination bill. The second, 32, was classification and sentencing. The third is 33, pretrial bail issues. And that's essentially, without going into a lot of detail, essentially that whole bill repeals that part of Senate Bill 91 and takes away the pretrial credit under electronic monitoring, which I just talked about a case for that just a few moments ago that I think we all find fairly offensive. And then 34 is the probation and parole section. And what that does, it reduces the earned compliance. They were essentially getting one for one. So if they went to jail for 30 days and they were filled all of the requirements, they gave them a one-for-one good time. So they were essentially serving half the time that they were. And that's without the other parole issues and the other things that can reduce time. That's being reduced. early termination of parole, which required recommended parole, no matter how someone was behaving or no matter how heinous the crime may have been, has been repealed, as it was prior to 91. The timing of parole hearings, they're no longer requiring an application that goes back to the, removes the automatic hearing and requires an application and leaves it up to corrections to determine if it's appropriate depending on the crime and the behavior of the perpetrator. Finally, it returns all of the parole sections to what they were before Senate Bill 91. So on discretionary parole eligibility, we removed these crimes from discretionary parole. Non-sex Class A felonies, robbery one, assault one, arson one. B felonies if the person had one or more prior felony convictions. C felonies if the person had two or more prior felony convictions. And all sex felonies, B and C, sex assault 2, sexual abuse of a minor 2, distribution of child pornography. So what you're seeing is the administration, by working with the legislature, public safety, corrections, and the courts, have determined, this may be a surprise to many of you, that Senate Bill 91 was not effectively reducing crime in the state of Alaska. So this is a total repeal of all of the things that result in trying to control this issue. So the revolving door, those of you that are seeing the same people time after time after time, those of you that are arresting the same people time after time after time, if we can get these across the finish line, which will occur in the Senate, we're going to need your help in the House. The way the House organized, the chair of Judiciary is a guy named Matt Klayman who really likes Senate Bill 91. Good man. We're going to have to lean on him that we have some serious changes to make. So I think that's important, and we're going to need your help on that issue.
So this is a lot of work that goes in. Figuring out which parts of the laws, Senate Bill 91, need to be repealed and replaced with what works. It's a lot of work. And right now, the House is going to be a very big challenge to get any of that passed. That's the reality. One vote matters. We organized in a fashion, and the power was distributed in a fashion that it is going to make it very difficult to get that done. We're going to try our darndest, but the reality is putting one vote and holding up the process for 30 days has resulted in us being able to have pro-Senate Bill 91 people in positions of power. So that's the reality.
Questions?
We could
Education?
Do... Yes. If we can, I just want to do the one section of the live survey.
So if you haven't taken the survey, can we click over to that, please? So some of you are going to say, my choice is not in the survey. I'm upset with you, Machiki, because my exact choice is not in the survey. But what you'll see in the survey are things that are likely to be choices that I have this year. Okay? And that's what I have to work on. I know that, Stacy, you may have just this choice that you think is a really good idea that you'd like to see in the poll. But, folks, this is likely what we have to work with. So the first question, and this is, go on my Facebook page, take the survey if you haven't taken it. This is a live link, so right at this second, 1,356 of you have taken it. When they did the statewide one, they had just over 6,000. This is 1,356 in District O. So that's an amazing result. Keep taking it, please. For those of you that haven't, I want to know how you feel about things. But I asked, what do you believe should be the legislature's top priority? Number one, was increase education spending at 41%. So that's great for you to clap, but this is fun. The second choice right behind that at 35% is reduce state spending. So that's why we have a tough job. Next one is, what do you believe should be the legislature's second priority? The first item is pass new crime legislation. And then it goes down to, what was that? That one was at, so I got to tell you, on both of these, permanent fund dividend was 5% on the first one as a first priority. The second one, it was 17%. So as a second priority, it came up a little bit. But the second priority in that one was, pay a full permanent fund dividend was 17% in this one. What's the next one after 31? No, right there. If you scroll up, So they're all pretty even after that. For the second priority, they believe new crime legislation is the most important, and then the others, invest in better roads, increase education spending, and a permanent fund dividend, were pretty split. Next, criminal laws, get tougher, 48%. Target root causes, 42%. Adjust if needed was 9%. Do you believe the legislature should fix specific problems found in 91 or completely repeal and replace? Which I think is fascinating, that fix specific actually had a few more points in this district so far than repeal and replace. And I think that's just because we communicated there's four or five things we really want to retain in the 91. The victims' rights, the higher murder rate, better pretrial monitoring. Do you support or oppose the governor's proposed budget reductions of $1.6 billion? All support, 40.8%. All oppose, 59.2%. Now, that compares to the second priority up top, that you want us to reduce the budget. So the reason why that document's a perfect discussion is you want us to reduce the budget. We need to talk about where and for the services you really count on, how we can pay for them, right? Next one down. In which areas do you believe there should be reductions to state spending? Number one at 44% was public assistance. Number two at 42% was the university. Number three at 35% was Medicaid. No one wants us to cut public safety. That was 8%. Senior services is next, for we don't want you to cut them, at 10%. Go up. In which areas do you believe there should be no reductions to state spending? The first was public safety at 67%. Second was education at 58%. The numbers are higher than one. They don't add up to 100% because you could select as many as you wanted to. We didn't want to limit your choices to one item. And then it goes down from there, as you can see. But the no reductions, public assistance was only 5%. Alaska Marine Highway was 3%. Interesting. Next one down. Do you support or oppose? So these next two questions kind of dovetail with each other. This is, do you support or oppose a constitutionally guaranteed permanent fund dividend, which would hold its importance at the same level of other constitutionally required services, such as education, public safety, and transportation? 55% of you supported that, 44% opposed. If you go to the next one, unless we ask you, what if we add taxes? Do you still support the payment of a full dividend? It flips. Then 55% of you don't support it, and 44% of you do support it. So that's the discussion on how, if we would like to balance the budget. There's a political reality in Juneau right now with the way the House is organized. If we can't get there, what do we do next? That's the question. Next. Oh, well, you guys always believe we should move out of Juneau, which would be great. I support that. So yes, all of the time, 47%. Yes, part of the time, 37%. Only 14% think we should leave it in Juneau. So if I get a vote on that, I would like to stay home with my family as well. So we're closer to home. Assuming oil prices stay low in future years, please choose the statement which best reflects your fiscal position. Number one at 66% is I'd rather you reduce my dividend. Number two, I'm willing to pay new taxes at 28%. And number three, the budget has been reduced enough, 28%. Why am I asking that? Because you've already made it clear that you want the budget reduced, but you've made it clear that you want public safety and education funding to go up. You've made it clear that you want your dividend at a full amount, which I've committed to support, but I've got to ask you how all that balances. That's a conversation we need to be having. How does all that balance out mathematically? Math is hard, and you can't do it all. So although I've made that commitment to you, is that what you want? That's what I'm asking people. I'm not just going to go off of a poll. We're going to spend a lot of time talking together. But I think it's really important that we at least look at how difficult that balance is. Next, do you support or oppose? So that one is the kind of the work requirement. Do you believe folks should be working? The way we asked is, do you support or oppose prioritizing state funding for Medicaid, public assistance, and social programs to focus on those who are disabled and provide only a short-term safety net for the able-bodied? All support was 79%, almost 80. All oppose is 20%. Next one. We're almost out of questions. So do you support or oppose state paying a full PFD to individuals who are receiving monetary assistance from the state? All oppose, 52%. All support, 47.6. You feel the economy is improving? 10% do, holding steady is 41%, declining is 47%. Asked about cannabis regulations, folks seem to think they're about right. Do you support or oppose state funds being used to pay abortions? All oppose, 65%, all support, 34. I asked about whether or not...
Something about that, though?
No, not at this point. Not at this point. When it comes to the AKLNG project, which statement, we'll go to questions in a little bit. When it comes to the AKLNG project, which statement best represents your experience? Sounds like folks feel like they're getting a hard time getting the facts. And then the next one was, do you know how to contact your senator? Which is interesting. It's 7% of you don't know how to find me. So why did I go through that? It demonstrates some of the struggle that we go through on making these decisions. And if I sit down with any one of you, and I've talked to hundreds of you, right? They'll say, no, I want you to do this. And I say, what about this? And you go, oh, well, that makes it a little tougher. That's the job that we have. So engaging with us, as Ben said, of course, normally we have a pretty big crowd in here. We're going to have to hear from you on what's most important to you, because these are challenging things. But please, if you haven't taken it yet, please take the survey. And Ben, do we want to go to questions? So we're going to put a timer on for 30 seconds, and then I might go back to some of those slides, because there's some budget stuff as we're answering questions. But if folks can kind of line up, and you'll have 30 seconds to ask, one minute to ask a question, and then we'll try our best to answer. So you can direct them at me or Ben or both or whatever you choose to do.
I'd like to thank you young people here for having the town hall meeting. But the biggest problem I see, we wouldn't be here if you guys would raise the taxes on the oil industry. That's the biggest problem right there. They used to pay for our services, but now you want us to pay for these bloody government services, and it's a joke. But, Donna Arden testified on Dunleavy's budget that she did zero analysis on how the government's budget would impact jobs, students, local property taxes, seniors, and up to 16,000 Alaskans losing their job.
George, we need a question.
Okay, question, Peter. Do you support giving our permanent fund to us in full, or do you support giving the $1.9 billion to the oil industry in tax incentives?
Okay, are you going to do the mic, Conrad, or is... Okay, so that's, I think these work. We passed a bill called Senate Bill 21 a few years back. And at the highest proportion in the state, this district supported Senate Bill 21 remaining in place. What Senate Bill 21 did was change the oil tax structure, and at these oil prices resulted in billions more into the state coffers than would have occurred. The remaining credits are more like deductions. And we can talk. I'm always open to talk about those things in Juneau. I think we should reevaluate our oil tax policy periodically. But the reality of it is the credits that remain, although there are some legislators from the other side of the aisle that like to send out that $1.9 billion number, what's remaining is largely deductions. The only credit that's left is the per barrel credit. So how would you feel in our net base IRS tax system if they just decided that your business is no longer going to be able to write off deductions? That's
from the federal government subsidies.
So we're talking about state taxes. That is our system. That is the system that was supported by our voters. If our voters want to do something different, they can talk about that, but let's use real numbers. I'm happy to evaluate that result. The reality of it is, though, we are bringing in billions more than we were at these prices. The only way ACES was better is it brought in money, more money at higher prices. And that's not the case at these prices. There were some price points where the ACES structure would have brought zero revenue into the state. So I feel like we have a decent mix, always willing to talk about whether or not folks want to evaluate changes. But remember, we changed oil taxes and killed the credits over the last 4 years that added up to an $800 million bill that really wasn't benefiting the state substantially.
May I add?
Absolutely.
So we got an expense over here, and we got a state income, right? Approximately 70 cents of every dollar that comes into the state coffers is paid for by oil tax revenue. So as we're talking, restructuring a budget to figure out what that number needs to look like, what number's right for an economy that employs all of us, well, not all of us, but a good number of us, does that need to be 75, 80%, 90%?
Yes.
So 90%.
Well, they're making 90% more.
No. What I'm asking you to think about is a budget that is reliant upon 90% of its revenue from one source of the economy. Does that make sense for long-term health of the state?
Okay, next question.
This is Carrie Davidson. Thank you for this meeting and the opportunity. My question is, what is the people that are opposing the new crime bills, what is their reasoning behind not supporting these well-needed changes? I mean, what is their reason not to vote for them?
So I can't really answer that. As you know, I was a co-sponsor of Senate Bill 91, and it's interesting talking. So I don't know how many of you are watching Gavel. How many of you are watching us? Not as many as I'd like to see. You would learn so much about how we kind of got there, right? And then you would learn so much about why we need to make the changes. I don't know. Here's what I would take it down to as a basic point. We had a meeting before with Wildwood, and there were some past incarcerated folks that spoke. And it was actually an amazing meeting. I wish you would have made it. Because some of them, well, we wanted to meet with those employees, but they brought some ex-prisoners with them, some of which have just turned their lives around in an amazing manner, right? But they paid their price to society first. And I think on this restorative justice issue, which I do support, the part we forgot about is that first they have to pay the price for their crimes. And then we want them to come back out into society to be productive and successful, right? But that part's been lost, and that's a requirement in our Constitution, as well as the work to help reform, right? But that's the part that's missing, and that's the part why we're seeing the revolving door, and that's the reason why you're living in a neighborhood that has drug traffic and has for the last several years regularly inflicting your neighborhood with really bad things. And that's so I think they believe that human nature can repent regardless of the payment to society for the crimes they've committed. And I that's the part that was missing in 91. That's the part we're returning. Ben? You get this one.
Hi, I'm Karen. I represent the Alaska Nurses Association. And our question is, and our concern is, the $700 million cut to Medicare and health care. And I wonder what your, your stand is on that, if you think the $700 million cut to health care will stand in this budget.
Well, did you watch yesterday's meeting? Where's Christine? She watches, like, every meeting. She texts me during meetings, which is the only reason I carry a phone now. It's like, oh, no, here comes another Christine question. But she... what I will tell all of you, this is tough, but these are the only mics we have. I like to be standing. It's very difficult to just come meet with us once in a while and understand what we're doing. And Christine used to kind of, well, she turned into a big supporter because she watched what we do every day and she kind of realized what we're up against and the changes we're actually trying to make. But if you watch that meeting, those aren't real numbers. That's not going to happen. It took 2 years for the last 1115 waiver. So if you say that July 1st we're going to cut out $700 million, what I said on the record is you're going to say you're cutting $1.6 billion and you're going to come back with a supplemental budget of $1.7 billion. We need to make real cuts. And they didn't visit with those of us. I had that budget for 4 years. I've given them $300 million in ideas. I'll just one example that's not in that budget. The IHS leakage, so Indian Health Service recipients have 100% federal match. We spent $200 million of state money that should have been directed toward IHS recipients. All they have to do is start their treatment in a Native facility, and then they can be referred anywhere they want to go. We have management problems that are significant. We have overutilization. We need to talk about adequate eligibility. Those things take time. That's not going to happen on July 1st. So we want real cuts. And why I'm frustrated is not because someone's attempting to cut the budget, which we must do. It's because we need real numbers. We need experts looking at those things. We need to make it happen. One is something that should have happened 2 years ago. Some of the other issues are things that are going to take some time. So I don't believe those are going to stand simply because they're undeliverable, but there will be cuts to Medicaid. We live in a state where, you know, nearly 30% of us are using Medicaid, which is fine, but the cost is exorbitant. It's mismanaged, and we have to bring down the cost of health care, which will bring down the cost of Medicaid.
Yeah, I would just say that I'd just like to add that part of this is strategy as well. Part of it's strategy. If you have followed what happens with budget discussions in the past, you start with a very large budget and then you try to find agreement on what needs to be pared out of it. And in this conversation, we're starting with a low budget and asking what needs to be added back in. And although it may seem like the same, it is a totally different conversation that you're having, and it's an easier one to have. Bureaucracies defend themselves, and if it's already fully funded and you're going to try to cut, that's a more difficult conversation to have. So does this proposal end up looking the same with the final project? No. But is there going to be cuts? Well, there has to be. We got to do something different. I was elected in November.
Yeah, so and I was elected in 2013. We've been reducing since. But, guys, let's not do that. You get 30 seconds. You can come back around when everybody's been through. you can call us any, or you get a minute, right? You get a minute, and you can come back around, but let's all be respectful like we're being.